Welcome inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilley. Today we'll check in with some of the victims of this summer's floods in West Virginia and hear how they're dealing with Christmas this year.
My husband loved Christmas. I mean, our house used to be decorated so bad that the electric company would send us a Christmas card. But so that's going to be hard. But there'll be new traditions now, not like the old ones.
And we'll take a step back in time to find out what Christmas was like in Harper's Ferry in 1864.
The war's coming to an end, and everybody feels that. And you can actually experience joy when you also experience pain.
And a Jewish man talks about the time when he helped his Christian friend put a Jewish star on their Christmas tree.
We talked about the star, and I said, why don't you have a six-pointed star on your Christmas tree? Why a five? And they said, well, we don't have a six-pointed star, but if we had one, we'd put it on a tree.
You'll find these stories and more this week inside Appalachia.
Will I be home for Christmas? You can plan on me. Oh, please have snow and mistletoe and presents under the tree.
Welcome inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilley. The holidays are a time to create new memories with our loved ones, and those memories become so precious and even painful when those loved ones are away. Christmas this year will mark 6 months since June's historic floods, which devastated more than 4,000 homes and took 23 lives. For those still recovering, especially those who lost loved ones, the holidays can be more painful than joyful. You're about to hear from two families impacted by the floods, but with very different perspectives. Neither represents the whole picture of resiliency and recovery, but telling their stories is meant to be a reminder that many of the flood-damaged communities are just beginning to pick up the pieces. Kara Lofton has the story.
When you turn into Hope Village at the edge of the resort town White Sulphur Springs, crews from the nonprofit Mennonite Disaster Service can be seen installing decks on the back of a series of brand new row homes. A few doors down, young women in bonnets are painting their interiors. The homes are being built to house victims of June's flooding. This one is close to being ready for occupancy. So far, only three homes have been completed, including one now owned by Deborah Nicely.
So is this the master bedroom?
Yeah, this is the master bedroom.
If you followed the floods at all, you might recognize Nicely's name. Her husband, daughter, and grandson all died when their home washed away in the flood.
Well, good morning. 44 of West Virginia's 55 counties under a state of emergency. The Howard Creek here appears to be rising again.
5 months after that CBS report, Nicely and I are sitting at her new kitchen table. A boxer puppy wriggles for attention at our feet. Nicely says she adopted him because he looks remarkably like the dog her family owned before the floodwaters devastated her home. We talk about how she's doing now, especially around the holidays.
My husband loved Christmas. I mean, our house used to be decorated so bad that the electric company would send us a Christmas card. But so that's going to be hard, but there'll be new traditions now, not like the old ones.
She stares at a wood-painted sign propped against the wall that says the Nicelys. The sign was the only thing she was able to recover from the house that she shared with her husband for 35 years. Nicely says she's not going to decorate her new home for the holidays. No point when it's just her and the dog. She'll go to her son's for Christmas this year.
It's too soon.
Most of the time, Nicely says, she's just working to find a new normal.
I deal with it in my own way. I joke about it a lot. Some people take it right, some people don't.
Humor, it takes them outside of their own turmoil.
That's Harriet Wharf, a therapist in Lewisburg with Seneca Mental Health. She says the holidays can be particularly tough for people dealing with the aftermath of a natural disaster. Humor, she says, is a great coping mechanism.
But this, their first holiday, maybe still living with family members and not in their own home, there's a lot of difficult things that people cope with.
Worf says she's been seeing a lot of clients since West Virginia's floods. Most are struggling with anxiety that is particularly triggered by bad weather. But not everyone's experience with recovery is the same.
My name is Michelle Gay.
Gay is Nicely's new next door neighbor. A single mom, she and her two children, ages 12 and 10, were in Florida on vacation during June's flooding. She says she and her children haven't experienced the same trauma that many of her neighbors have because they didn't watch the waters rise. They just saw the aftermath. They still experience loss, though. 20 years of accumulated belongings.
I lost all of our Christmas ornaments and all their decorations that they've made over the years, and their baby's first Christmas ornaments that I had made when they were born. You know, things like that. But again, it's just stuff, and we're all here, and that's what matters. So that's what we're focused on right now.
She said the floods were a roundabout blessing. Her prior home was more than 100 years old and needed a few repairs. Now, she's able to start over.
We get a brand new home, which we never thought would ever happen in a million years. So that's, you know, that was one of the pulls to come here.
For her, the holidays aren't that different. They usually celebrate with family away from White Sulphur Springs, but
we're a little more appreciative this year than we probably were last year, honestly, because everything was kind of taken for granted until it's taken away.
Across the state, hundreds are still living with family in campers or temporary housing, a far cry from last year's holidays. Recovery is a slow process. But Worf, the therapist, says one thing that is incredibly important in rebuilding lives is something that many West Virginians already have, each other. Leaning on neighbors, Worf says, can go a long way on the path toward healing. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Kara Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from the Benedum Foundation. And for those who might not feel they have much to celebrate this holiday season, we want to pause and perhaps give a little hope for those suffering. What's the best way to support a loved one who's grieving? To find out, we wanted to check in with the West Virginia Family Grief Center. It's a nonprofit organization that works to help families with children who have lost a loved one. It's the only one of its kind in West Virginia. Stephanie Savage says she and a few other folks started the group about 12 years ago when they noticed that there wasn't much help for people who were grieving in the region.
Was there any loss, if I could ask, in your life that you had experienced that might have motivated you perhaps on a personal level to do this?
Oh, yes. As a child, I was a griever. My father died when I was 10. And my older sister, Jessica Savage, died in a car accident when I was 33. There were other losses that I had experienced, and as a grieving child in particular, it was very difficult for me and my family. The death absolutely changed the construction of my family, and the Grief Center is designed to help families with children to deal with exactly what I had as a child.
Wow. So at the age of 10, you understand all too well what it's like to go through those anniversaries, the first, the second year, you know, Christmas and holidays. If you can, what kind of things do you think, you know, what's it like for people that might not understand, that might be a little insensitive to it for those folks who have, especially children who have lost somebody?
Oh, absolutely. People don't mean to be insensitive. I'm sure of that. But when a person has had a loss, a child or an adult, it is completely life-changing. And the emotions that are stirred, that are normal, are very hard for the griever to experience and also to witness. Depending on the age of the child, their reaction will be different. For an adult, there's a lot of similarities in grieving, even though each loss is unique. The grief for an adult, especially at the holidays, is very difficult. And the children in the family are going to be influenced by how the adult handles the grief. Someone watching a grieving person would want to fix them, want to make them feel better, when in reality what they really need is someone to be kind, someone to allow time for them to talk, to not be frightened by tears. And that's kind of rare to find.
And it might seem kind of like an obvious question, but why do you think that, why is it that the holidays can be particularly tough for folks who have lost a loved one?
For a number of reasons. Number one, there's the hype of the holiday. and everything is family-oriented and fun-oriented and happy-oriented. When a person has had a loss, they're not feeling any of that. Not very often, anyway. And they're feeling isolated and kind of like a downer for everybody else. So sometimes someone who is grieving will isolate, which is not a good thing for them to do. My advice usually for someone who's grieving is please be kind to yourself. Let yourself take what you need for time to feel the pain, let the emotions flow, and giving yourself permission to step away from chaos. What I found is most grievers are exhausted. Grieving is a very tiring thing. And then when all the hype of the holidays come in, they want to be thinking they should be part of it, when in reality they really need to be kind and give themselves permission to stay calm and quiet as much as possible.
I think you touched on this earlier in how people react to other folks who are in grief, and perhaps another person might not be grieving. If you are a friend or a loved one who knows somebody who is going through a loss, and this might be their first or even second time going through the holidays, what would be your advice for other people on how to interact with those folks to help?
That's a great question, because everybody wants to help when someone you see someone in pain, emotional pain. And what I will definitely recommend is that if you are a support for someone who is grieving, be gentle with them. Help them understand that what they're feeling is normal. Be there to listen and to take care of themselves. You want to encourage someone to not completely isolate, but if, say, for instance, they're at a gathering and everyone is having a good time and there may be some chaos going on, if you're a support for someone who's grieving, keep your eye out for that person. And if you see that they might need a timeout, maybe suggest taking a walk or just sitting quietly, even if that person may need to leave the gathering and go home. Let the person that you're trying to support understand this is normal, because they're thinking there's something wrong with them, when in reality it's not. And you said something a minute ago about whether the first or second year. There can be many years after a loss that someone will still have trouble with a holiday. And that's normal too.
Yeah, that's a good point. It never really goes away. I mean, it's always a loss that a person has, I guess.
Yes, it's true. It feels different as the years go forward. Feels different, but it's still a loss.
Now, the facility is located in Morgantown, and, you know, West Virginia has a very broad, we stretch out from all the way from Wheeling down, you know, I'm based in southern West Virginia. How can those, and in rural parts of the state too, how can folks who might not live close to Morgantown get help like you all provide? Because I know you mentioned before, this is the only one of its kind.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, what we will tell people is that they can contact the West Virginia Family Grief Center. We do have a website too. They can contact the West Virginia Family Grief Center. We will send information if need be, if they can't get to us. We also will go to different, we have in the past and we will continue to do this, go to different areas and give classes to people on how to handle grief and loss. We would gladly help another agency get started somewhere else in the city, in the state. We've presented in Wheeling, we've presented in Kanawha County, mostly to counselors, school counselors. Schools are really the front line when it comes to children and grief. Again, they can give us a call. We will get them the help they can. Support groups are wonderful for adults or for kids, and there may be some that they're not aware of in their area. Sometimes a local hospice, giving a call to a local hospice, they might have some information about support groups that the griever might not be aware of. So I would recommend that they call different hospices in the area. Sometimes churches will offer it. And so, unfortunately, we meet with people that are within 50 miles of our center in Morgantown. But you're right, we need more in the state.
And you mentioned support groups and making You mentioned support groups and making that phone call and reaching out. Sometimes it seems that it's really difficult for people who are grieving to reach out, or they might not realize that they are actually going through this grieving process. And you hear a lot of times, I'm okay, I don't want to be in any trouble, it's okay, I'll be fine. What would you say to those folks that might be hesitant to reach out?
Well, basically, number one, I would say normalizing them, telling them, absolutely, I understand that you don't want to be a burden to anyone. You don't want to be a problem to anyone. But understanding it is hard to be around people that don't get it. My support group that I run, many of the people come there to be around people who get it, who understand about loss. So I would encourage someone who might be reluctant to try a support group, only because that's when you'll be around people that understand what grief is. Normalizing, telling people that, yes, what you're feeling is normal. All of the emotions of grief are normal. And knowing that they are not isolated, that they're part of a group of people that can help.
And Stephanie, would you have anything else that you'd like to add and share with our listeners as we approach the holidays, the Christmas and New Year's celebrations?
Yes, just one small thing. Be kind. Please be kind to yourself. If you're the griever, please be kind to someone that you know is feeling the pain of loss. We don't mean to be unkind, but making a special effort to be kind.
Be kind. And we hope that it spreads holiday hope to all of our listeners.
Absolutely.
Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Jessica. Thank you.
That was Stephanie Savage with the West Virginia Family Grief Center. I guess all of us adults are carrying around some kind of loss this holiday season. But it's songs like this that make me smile and treasure the happy moments I have with my loved ones. It's called Silvery Bells, and it was recorded by Richie Collins, and, well, I just love it. It reminds me of my Papa Dean. He died a few years ago, but I imagine he would sing this song just like this.
In the air there's a feeling of Christmas.
Up next, we'll hear a story about a radio show that helps families connect with their loved ones in prison. We'll also hear some tips for how not to gain too much weight during all the holiday eating. That's coming up next on Inside Appalachia. We'll be right back.
Silver bells, silver bells. It's Christmas time in the city. Ring-a-ling. Hear them.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. With career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu.
Today on Inside Appalachia, we're talking about Christmas and about how some people cope with the holidays. Because it's not all joy and cheer, at least not for all of us. I'm sure there are soldiers and sailors stationed away from home trying to make the best of the holidays. And then there are families with loved ones in prison. Family members can't always visit, and inmates can't always get time on the phone line on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. And this can be especially true for families of inmates in high-security prisons. And many of these prisons in rural Appalachia aren't accessible by public transportation. But families of inmates in seven prisons in central Appalachia are able to connect to their loved ones through a radio show called Hip Hop from the Hilltops, Calls from Home. Every Monday night, there are dozens of family members trying to get through to WMMT radio station in Whitesburg, Kentucky. Around Christmas time, the lines to the radio station are overloaded with families trying to get through. It's a show we first talked about last year when we listened to some of the messages left on Christmas.
To my son, Mr. Devon Hall, Dad, love you, man. Always, forever, my brother, love you, man. Wish you were here, but you're always here with us in spirit, soul, mind, body, and soul. Saying we never going to give up.
Last year, a former producer of Hip Hop from the Hilltops, Sylvia Ryerson, actually left the studio and traveled to speak directly with some of the families. Sylvia worked with the families to capture scenes from their lives to broadcast for the inmates to hear. She went to Virginia to go with Devon's grandmother to church.
Hi, Devon. This is your grandma. You know what you call me. This is G-Ma, Grandma Essie. And I'm so blessed that we are on our way to church today. You know, every Sunday when I go to church, I generally carry you in my Bible. Well, I left you in North Carolina this week, that picture that I usually have with me. But I got you in my heart 24/7. And remember what I told you, regardless of what everybody else do, you keep on keeping a prayer in your heart and spread that to your brothers, because the more prayer y'all do, the heavier y'all can fight whatever demons may be trying to dance on you. Hey, are you ready? All right, we're heading out, and we'll be at church at 10 o'clock.
So, what's up, Devon? It's Deontay. Good morning. I'm about to go to church with Grandma.
Going down Staunton Avenue. Most of the neighborhood up and down 10th Street is just about gone. And on our usual plea, we are late. We're a few minutes. The clock is a little bit fast, but we're still late. Church's supposed to start at 10, so we're going to make it real well. Hey, how you doing?
How are you?
All good.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Hey, we got to get on the choir today.
Who got to get on the choir?
I do.
They short of people. I don't know if we go to the bathroom. If I can make my hair work, I'll sing. If I can't, I'm going to be right back out here because I didn't bring a pig.
Bless God, you got hair on your head. Could be the other way.
Okay. I'm Stella Thomas, your grandma's buddy and buds. But I wish you'd be have a blessed day, because I got a brother-in-law been dead 40 years now for something he didn't do. And they didn't let him out yet. I just hope he come free one day. Man, he ain't there for nothing, though. You know that? When you ain't got no lawyer, they railroad you. When you don't have money, that's where it go. They take advantage of you. Yeah, we are. We thinking about you this morning. We're going to sing for you.
Devon, this is Pastor Keaton, and all who are with you there. I just want to let you know that as you receive this message, that our prayers and our blessings go with you. We miss you, man. We just wish you were here. And as I make this recording, I think about those days that you were here when you were growing up and you were very active around the Lord's house. I remember us going to Christmas parades and all that together, down to see the lights down in Bedford and everything. And you were right there. You were right by my side, man. You were one of my specials. And I never forget that, and I never shall, because you still have that same place in my heart. And one day, we may, and I pray, we'll have that opportunity to have some personal and private moments again. Take care of yourself now. I'm counting on you to do that and do it well, all right? I'm going to be praying for you. We love you. We miss you. And may God bless you.
Now, as we mentioned earlier, this audio letter was produced by Devon's family with the help of producer Sylvia Ryerson. She's one of the original producers or DJs of the show, Hip Hop from the Hilltops. WMMT broadcasts the show from the Apple Shop Studio in Whitesburg, Kentucky on Monday nights from 7 until 10. The producer or DJ takes music requests for the first couple of hours, and from 9 until 10, families call into the station to leave recorded messages for their loved ones in prison. Now, Sylvia's launched a new project called Restorative Radio. She collected messages in person from 9 families of inmates. I've invited Sylvia Ryerson into the studio to tell us more. Hi, Sylvia.
Good morning, Jessica. Great to be here.
Sylvia, you heard from Devon's family many times over the years on the phone, I'm sure, when they called in for Hip Hop from the Hilltops. What was it like to meet them in person?
It was such a joy to get to meet these families in person and work with them, you know, outside of the studio, in their communities and homes. And personally, that was a big reason I wanted to do this project. After being at WMMT and, you know, being a telephone operator, essentially, for so many years, and hearing these voices and sort of hearing each other over the phone, we already had a relationship through the show, but to really sort of make that real and get to see each other face-to-face was so powerful.
Yeah, so we just heard a scene of the family going to church, and they took the recorder with them to record these sounds and send the scene, at least the sounds of the scene, back to Devon. And then I think the sound goes on. They make a trip back to the house. One of the things that Devon mentioned in the past was that he missed home-cooked meals. So the family is cooking this meal, and we're about to listen to a clip of them while they're cooking this meal. But Sylvia, tell us what you saw while this family was interacting, and what's it like to be there while this was happening?
Yeah, so this was, you know, a day in the life of Devon's family, and wanting to share that with him and include him in that. And so this whole project was really a collaborative project. And so I worked with his grandmother, Essie, and his mom, Krista, beforehand to figure out together, you know, what are the sounds and the people and the places that you want to share with Devon, and bringing him with you in that. And so that was kind of how together we planned out that piece.
Yeah, let's pick it back up where they're, I think they're waiting a little impatiently on dinner.
Yeah, this message is going to Devon. He know that we need him here because that boy will be in the kitchen cooking with me.
Fish boy.
That's the apples that we're making. The apple with the cherry filling in the top, and I'm reheating some green beans that have like bits of garlic in it and some seasoned salt and butter.
So after that, Sylvia, what happened next? Did you finally get to eat?
Well, we did, and it was delicious. But before we ate, we all gathered round in a circle, and Essie, his grandmother, said a beautiful prayer, sending it out to Devon and telling Devon that he was in all our thoughts as we were there together. And throughout the piece, Essie did such a beautiful job of sort of bringing Devon into the scene. And so we all sat down and had dinner together, and then we started telling stories. And his mother, his uncle, his nephew, his brother, they were all there, and we just sat around the table and told stories about who Devon is and their memories of Devon growing up.
Deontay was telling me that a little girl in his class that you helped with math when we were over at the Presbyterian Church with Reverend Reinhold, the little girl said she would have never graduated from school had you not taught her her math, and she really appreciated it. You remember she had 2 or 3 little brothers, and all of them didn't know that you did your math from right to left. They thought that you pushed all the answer up under one line, and the teachers were just failing them. They weren't telling them that this is the way you do it from right to left, and you extend it out. But she was able to graduate from school because of your help and your support.
I think from what Essie's saying here, you can just hear how proud she is of Devon and the Devon that she knows, and is reminding, you know, Devon of who he is to his family. And I think with those messages of encouragement and stories is also a real sense of looking towards the future and to tell him to hold on.
I want you to envision yourself, write notes to yourself, and envision yourself being a free man, because you have a lot to offer to the world. The devil might try to block you. Don't look at it like, oh, I may never get out of here. Envision it. If it doesn't happen one day, you've always known that we never give up.
you keep on working on it because I see you being home with us for the holidays.
Wow, that sounds like something my mother would tell me. It's so moving. She still believes in him and encourages him to believe in himself.
It's true. You can just hear how much love she has for him in that clip.
And we did hear his family talking about how he inspired a girl to graduate from school and a lot of other positive things. But he is in prison. What do you say to folks who might listen and say he's in prison for a reason and maybe criticize the show for even creating this platform?
I mean, the thing is, what studies show across the board is if people incarcerated are able to maintain contact with their families and their communities at home, that's one of the most important things in terms of reducing recidivism once people get out. It's very difficult to travel to these prisons. The only way to get to them is by private vehicle. Many of these families live several hours distance away, and it's often very difficult to get phone calls through, and the cost of calling is very expensive. So there are so many barriers to communication, which is one of the reasons that this radio show, the Calls from Home show, exists as a way to sort of break through some of those obstacles that families face.
And there was another part of this trip in which Devon's mother really showed her unconditional love for her son. Let's listen.
Hey, Vaughn, this your mom. I'm getting ready to head back down this road. I came into Virginia just so I could have this experience for you, with you, about you, and I love you. And you know, I'm going to reiterate what your uncle and your grandma said. Continue to know that out here, we're on the level that we're fighting for you. We got things that we're sending out to whoever will listen. Just know that you are not alone, that things will go right for you. It just takes time. Unfortunately, it's taken us a long time. You're growing up in there. But keep your faith, keep your strength, just keep being that strong person. Also know that we never think, oh, Devon's going to stay in prison. We're going to always be fighting for a system that's going to do right. I know it's a lot of people that go to jail that should not be there. Fellas, always know that people are out here worried. They're trying to make some changes where they can look at these crimes that are not committed, where we can look at the things that are done that are wrong. And also for the people that are inside, like Mama said, we've met some great people, people that let us in. Oh, man, beautiful in spirit. People that are inside, beautiful in spirit. So, baby, with that being said, until I talk to you again, so call me soon. And fellas, we love y'all as well.
Did you ever look into their cases, Sylvia?
So the purpose of this series was not to, you know, reinvestigate each case. It was, you know, to help, to give these families a way to, you know, show their love for this person in prison. I can tell you some specifics about Devon's case, which is that he was sentenced when he was 19 years old to, he was convicted of carjacking, and no one was killed or seriously injured in the incident. And he has maintained his innocence the whole time, and because of that, he didn't take a plea deal, and so he's serving a 25-year sentence. And his name is actually was spelled wrong in all of his court records, and it continues to be spelled wrong today in the prison system. And so, you know, like many of the cases that I encountered, these are families that couldn't afford a lawyer, had court-appointed lawyers, and you hear sort of how their cases were kind of steamrolled through the court system. And so I didn't go back and investigate each case, but I think it really is a cross-section. You know, one of my goals in producing this piece and this series and how we're incarcerating is, people, you know, in addition in the state to reaching specific individuals in prison, it's also reaching a larger audience. And I hope that hearing these families' voices and their stories about who these people are and what they're in there for can change our assumptions about who is incarcerated in these prisons that are in our region. I think we have, we make assumptions about people in supermax prisons being the worst of the worst. And when you start digging deeper about what sentences they're serving and how they got there.
It seems a little more complicated than some folks might hope to and choose to believe.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to to not think about who's in prison here in Central Appalachia. And I hope that this project helps humanize the people that are here in our region.
Sylvia Ryerson, a former host of Hip Hop from the Hilltops out of WMMT, now an independent producer working on a new project called Restorative Radio. Thanks for sharing these stories with us, Sylvia.
Okay, thanks so much, Jessica. Bye.
Again, Calls from Home is broadcast live from WMMT station in Whitesburg, Kentucky, every Monday night from 9 until 10. I'm Jessica Lilly. You're Inside Appalachia. We'll be right back.
There's a chubby little bluebird calling. We got mistletoe and holly and those flowers with the red leaves I forget. We got ice and little lickles and a sunset so magical and the evening's only barely started yet. Folks are on the pond out skating, careless practice serenading. Snowmen and women grow out of the ground. And where once it all was peaceful, now it's boisterous and gleeful. Oh, it's wintertime, the sun is going down.
Baby, it's cold outside, which is A-OK with us at Inside Appalachia because it's the season of peppermint mocha coffees, cheese balls, and holiday parties. But it can also be the season of weight gain. Carol Lofton talked with a couple experts about how to still enjoy holiday treats while avoiding packing on the pounds. At Chick-fil-A in Charleston, breakfast with Santa is in full swing. One of the families here are the Roops.
Bailey is 5 and Taylor is 2.
The Roops say around the holidays they eat a lot more appetizers and special drinks like punch and hot chocolate. I asked them if the treats made it harder for them to stay healthy.
I think it's a lot harder during the holidays, and it's not that the foods are so much different, it's just that there's always so much more sitting around. So she makes like a lot of different cookies and pastries and things like that, and they're always sitting on the counter. So you always just have to have one when you walk by.
Amanda Roop chimes in.
Unfortunately, my New Year's resolution, everybody's is like, lose weight, lose weight. Mine's not to gain weight. So seriously, I'm serious as a heart attack. Like, that's what I really tell people.
Amanda Roop might be on to something. Recent studies show that while holiday weight gain isn't huge, about 1.3 pounds in the United States, it can take up to 5 months to lose that weight again. If you gain 1.3 pounds every year and don't lose it, that means you're racking up an extra 13 pounds a decade.
It's good to enjoy these foods and to enjoy the celebration, the holiday surrounding the food, but eating a large amount doesn't make it any more special.
That's nutritionist Kristen McCartney, a supplemental nutrition assistance program educator for West Virginia's Extension Program. She says enjoying the foods you like in smaller amounts can be just as satisfying as gorging yourself on holiday favorites. In other words,
portion control.
Are there any foods that are like a total no-no from a nutritional perspective that people are really popular, but it's just like, oh my gosh, stay away?
I really try to encourage people to not make foods off limits, because as soon as you do that, then there's a tendency to kind of overdo those things, those foods. So I really think any food can fit into a healthy diet as long as you're managing your portions appropriately.
McCartney pauses and then says if there's one thing we could live without, it's soda and other sugary beverages.
And it's something that tends to add a lot of calories throughout the year. Switching to water is a really easy way to kind of eliminate those extra calories that we get from those.
Back at Chick-fil-A, Jonathan Roop says that tactic worked for him.
Basically, I lost probably like 24-25 pounds, and it was for I just cut out all sugary drinks and limited portions significantly.
About 2 weeks before the Breakfast with Santa event, nutritionists are testing recipes for an upcoming cooking class at the WVU Charleston Extension office.
I just seeded and deveined my jalapeno pepper, and now I'm going to do, seed the banana pepper and dice that, and then we're going to add, once our skillet heats up over there with the olive oil, we're going to add the peppers and onions to the pan, cook those a little bit until they're translucent, and then we're going to add our potatoes and then the rest of our ingredients.
That's Gina Wood, a registered dietitian who works with McCartney. She adds a couple tips for people to try when attempting to stay healthy during the holidays.
What are the ways that I try to maintain my health all year round and kind of sticking to those habits during the holiday season? It's of course more difficult, but you still have to make exercise a priority. You still have to Get regular meals that are well balanced.
The nutritionists say that shopping is a good example. When you're out trying to get those last few presents, make sure to bring a healthy snack with you. That way, if you get stuck out longer than you were expecting, you aren't reaching for the holiday Starbucks drink or a Big Mac, but can tide yourself over until you get home. Also, just try keeping on schedule. If you're having a big lunch or big dinner, don't skip your previous meals because then you're going to eat even more. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Kara Lofton.
Next, we're going to take a look back at how Christmas was celebrated in years past. Every year, dozens of people in Harper's Ferry go back in time. The shops and at the National Park, it's 1864 all over again. It's fun for locals and visitors to see how people in West Virginia celebrated Christmas in the Victorian era. But it's also a reminder of how bittersweet it can be for people to try to find a bit of good cheer in the midst of a long and terrible war. Last Christmas, Liz McCormick with West Virginia Public Broadcasting visited the Harper's Ferry Civil War Christmas. From the Inside Appalachia Archives, here's that story.
I'm walking along cobblestone streets in historic Harper's Ferry. It's still 2015, but it sure doesn't feel like it. Most of the buildings around me were built in the 1830s or 1840s. I'm surrounded by reenactors, dressed in Victorian style, women in plaid, poofy dresses, bonnets, and some with green or blue parasols. Some men are in black suits with a top hat. And some patrol the streets, dressed in their Union blues, keeping an eye out for Confederate guerrilla raiders.
My paws lift. Charge! One.
There's a blacksmith hammering in the distance. Some Union soldiers are looking for a sweet to eat at the confectionery, or they stop by the provost marshal's office to see if there's a letter or a package from home. A train rumbles by as I walk outside a Union soldier hospital. I'm only brought out of the magic when I see tourists dressed in modern clothes ogling the same scenes I am. I arrive at a large white tent. There's a small stage where two men play on instruments, one on a banjo, and the other taps a beat on a cow jawbone. On either side of the stage are long tables with holiday crafts for children, and in the corner of the tent is a small Christmas tree decorated with popcorn and cranberry strands.
Mean, but he is in his appropriate blue uniform. Rebels have no space in gingerbread cookies.
22-year-old Colleen Moran stands next to her grandmother, Mary Lou Taylor. They're standing behind one of the tables in Victorian-style plaid dresses. They're decorating gingerbread cookies with visiting children.
There's colored icing and paper faces that you can put on the gingerbread, and the very difficult decision is always deciding whether you should give your gingerbread to the tree or if you should just eat it.
Moran's grandmother tells me how ornaments like the gingerbread cookies used to be the norm during the Civil War.
I explained to the visitors that they did not save ornaments from year to year. They made them fresh every year, and they made them out of things that were available, like nuts and pine cones and things like this. And then they would just throw them out at the end of the year. But during the Civil War, the German soldiers started bringing the glass-blown ornaments from Germany. And they remembered those, and so those became more popular. So it was actually during the Civil War that they started saving the ornaments from year to year.
Taylor and her granddaughter come from a family of history buffs. In fact, Taylor sewed the dresses the two of them are wearing. She's been volunteering at this event for almost 30 years, and for Moran, this is year number 16.
Well, it's very important just historically to this area to remind people of what happened here on this land and this place to the people who are related to a lot of the current residents here. They're their great-great-grandfathers or however many greats. They lived and celebrated and died here. There's a lot of memories here, and it's important to remember that.
This is the 45th year for the old-time Christmas event in Harper's Ferry. It's put together by local businesses and the National Park Service, and it always happens the first weekend in December. John King is the supervisory park ranger for the Harper's Ferry National Historical Park.
All the activities here are something that actually happened here, and as much as possible at the original event location where they happened too.
King's colleague, Melinda Day, has left her ranger uniform home today. She's wearing a light green plaid dress, and her hair is pulled back in a low bun, sort of like Mary Todd Lincoln.
Because this is a historical park, and because we do have a rich Civil War history, we focus on the idea that Christmas and war coexist. Almost any visitor that walks into this park understands that someplace in this world, American service people are putting their lives on the line, even though it may be Christmas. And when a visitor steps into this park for a Civil War Christmas, that's the same story and relevance that resonates with them in modern times.
Day says Harper's Ferry was a strategic site in the war. It switched hands 14 times. And in late 1864, things were changing.
The war's coming to an end, and everybody feels that. And you can feel joy while you're feeling pain. I think anybody that's been through something like that could nod their head and say, yes, I understand that. You can actually experience joy when you also experience pain.
Private, I am told there's perhaps a package for me, a box sent from home.
Tom Bates is a reenactor portraying a Union soldier stationed in Harper's Ferry. There's a package waiting for him at the provost marshal's office from his wife. Some Union soldiers check the contents of the box to make sure there isn't any contraband or Confederate propaganda.
Sir, should we let him take the rest of the...
What else do we have here?
It looks like some clothes and packages.
Yeah, clothing is good. Yes, that's all approved. We can approve all that.
Thank you very much.
Bates gets some warm clothes, a welcome reminder of home, especially at this time of year. But it wasn't always like this for soldiers during the Civil War. Sometimes they might get a letter saying their child or wife died from disease. Or sometimes it was the other way around. Again, Park Ranger Melinda Day.
Today, you know, UPS rolls up to our door. That makes us happy at Christmas time because we think joy is wrapped up inside of a box. But during the Civil War, it's going to be Adams Express that might send you a notice in the mail that you have a package waiting down at the depot and you need to get down there and pick it up. Well, it's your son's pocket watch. It's a small Bible that he carried in his pocket. Maybe it's a pocket knife that you gave him one Christmas long ago. Now you're getting it back. It's the reverse effect. There is no joy in this, but that's a Christmas of 1864.
Still, the soldiers stationed in Harper's Ferry in 1864 tried to make merry as best they could, even if some of them were far away from home at Christmas.
Oh, we'll rally round the flag, boys, we'll rally once again, shouting the battle cry of freedom. We will rally.
For Inside Appalachia, I'm Liz McCormick in Harper's Ferry.
Shouting the battle cry of freedom, the Union forever, hurrah, boys, hurrah, down with the traitor and up with the star, while we rally.
This year, Christmas Eve coincides with the beginning of Hanukkah, the Jewish celebration of lights. For our final story, we're going to hear about a Christmas memory from a Jewish man. It's an interview that was recorded at our Charleston office as part of a series of stories about religion, faith, and cultural identity in Appalachia. Linda Pickholtz Klein and her father Bob Pickholtz both grew up Jewish in a Pittsburgh neighborhood called Squirrel Hill. Bob recalls holidays with Jews and non-Jews, and he even has a special Christmas memory.
Well, I have many fond memories of going to the Paul Zedek Synagogue. I mean, that was the center of my religious life, and I still visit it every once in a while, and it's changed dramatically, but that still was the focus of my life religiously.
What part of being Jewish play in your childhood?
Oh, I grew up in a predominantly Jewish neighborhood. Went to a grade school that was predominantly Jewish students and non-Jewish teachers, which posed an interesting situation during the Christmas holidays, because for one reason or another, we thought it was we weren't allowed to say the word Christ, and we just didn't do that. So we were supposed to sing Christmas songs, and we'd go, our Savior is born. And I'll never forget that.
Beyond public school being in a minority-majority neighborhood, and because you and my mother stayed in Pittsburgh, I had that same opportunity, although I think more of my teachers were Jewish. So that wasn't quite the issue, I think, for me growing up in that same neighborhood, which is still a very sweet and Jewish neighborhood in the inner city in Pittsburgh,
yeah,
Pennsylvania.
Squirrel Hill. That's where the nuts come from.
Indeed. Many, many nuts come from there. What did it mean for you to be Jewish growing up there?
Nothing special, because it was the norm in my community, in my friendships.
And were most of your friends Jewish too?
Yes. Most of them were. Oh, I had a friend who was non-Jewish, and we used to like to go to his house at Christmas time because he had a train that ran on tracks around the Christmas tree, and that was kind of special to us.
Other than the trains under the Christmas tree at non-Jewish friends, did you notice any other differences in those friends' families versus what your family did?
Not really.
Wow.
I think most families are the same no matter what.
Indeed. Indeed, indeed. And I also recall the interactions with non-Jews, particularly at Christmas time. We had our route that we went to the Turktogans, and we went to the Tezas, and we went to some other folks who had Christmas trees. Since you were tall, very often you were asked to put the star or the topper or whatever on the top of the tree. And for at least one of those trees, I think at the Tezas, they had a Jewish star.
Well, yeah. We talked about the star, and I said, why don't you have a six-pointed star on your Christmas tree? Why a five? And they said, well, we don't have a six-pointed star, but if we had one, we'd put it on a tree. So I went and took some welding rod and bent it in two triangles and soldered them together, and we put a six-pointed star on your Christmas tree.
And you got to put it up there.
And I got to put it up.
That's right.
That was Bob Pickholt speaking with his daughter, Linda. Their interview was recorded as part of the American Pilgrimage Project, a partnership of the national nonprofit StoryCorps and Georgetown University's Berkeley Center for Religion, Peace, and World Affairs. Their story was recorded in Charleston, West Virginia, and was produced by Roxy Todd. On our show next week, we'll be hearing more from this series of conversation about religious faith in Appalachia. The meaning of Christmas has changed a lot for me since I was a kid. I never thought I'd get to spend some of the season with you as host of a public radio show, but I'm glad I did. And till next week, thanks for joining me as we journey throughout Appalachia and making Inside Appalachia a part of your holiday season. Cheers. We had help producing Inside Appalachia this week from WMMT, Georgetown University, and StoryCorps. Music in today's show was provided by Josh Ritter, Corey Chisel, and the Wandering Sons as heard on Mountain Stage, and the Richie Collins 3-0. Our producer is Roxy Todd. Our editor is Catherine Winter. Both Scotty White and Xander Alloy helped to mix the show. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at feedback@wvpublic.org. Find us on Twitter at InAppalachia or at Jessica Y. Lilly. You can also address your letters to Inside Appalachia in care of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, 600 Capitol Street, Charleston, West Virginia, 25301. The Inside Appalachia podcast is available on iTunes, Downcast, and at wvpublic.org. I'm Jessica Lilly. Inside Appalachia is a news and public affairs production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia, with career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu.